right, guys. So this is one of those, well, this is an angel investment I made. I don't know. I think I met Louisa like going on 4 years ago. The opportunity came to Aaron and I, but Aaron didn't see how she could really be as strategic as I was, since it was really targeting young girls, you know, daughters getting their first piercings. The business has really just grown into just, they're really owning the space.
Yeah, I may have missed the boat on this
you
one.
Might have made a little bit of a mistake, but they are owning the ear piercing space. They are, I think, at the end of the year, going to have like 30 locations.
They're also the only place that has nurses piercing ears as opposed to like 16-year-old, like, you know, stoners.
Yes.
Give Sarah, give people funky ear holes like Sarah has.
Yeah, but Louisa's background is Louisa Schneider, the founder of Rowan. Her background's really unbelievable. She was a banker, right, Phil? Wasn't
she? She was a banker.
Yeah, she was a banker, and she's sort of seen it all, done the pivots, done all the things that we talked to you guys about. So I'm excited for you to listen to this conversation.
Yeah. Thanks again to Sakara for sponsoring this episode.
Nothing makes me happier than bringing you guys companies that improve your life, make you feel better, make you look better, help you maximize your potential. That is what Sakara does. So many people have sent in their stories of how Sakara has changed their life, how it's given them more energy. Sakara brings expertly designed organic nutrition programs and wellness essentials right to your door.
They have their flexible signature nutrition program. It makes it like very, very easy.
This is for things like weight management, easing bloat, boosting energy, clearing your skin. I've been eating these metabolism bars that are such a great in-between meal type thing to fill you up, to make you feel good. It also tastes amazing. I just think companies like this are so, so fantastic for people who want to eat healthy, want to have their kids eat healthy, their families eat healthy, but don't have time or, you know, if you're me, skills to cook.
I can't speak more highly about Sakara. I mean, we're just living proof that we love it because we eat it all the time. So Sakara brings expertly designed organic nutrition programs and wellness essentials right to your door. They're science-backed. Ready-to-eat meals deliver results that you can see and that you can feel, from weight management and easing bloat to boosting energy and clearer skin. Right now, Sakara is offering our listeners 20% off your first order when you go to sakara.com/foster or enter the code foster at checkout. That is Sakara, sakara.com/foster to get 20% off your first order. sakara.com/foster.
How you doing?
Thanks for being here with us.
I'm happy to do it.
Yeah. Louisa is an investor in our fund.
Ooh.
That's right.
Yes, Louisa. She is.
So this is a real mutually beneficial relationship.
It really is.
You've never met Phil.
No, hi.
Hi, Phil. Nice to meet you.
It's a pleasure. It's nice to meet you too. I hear, obviously, all kinds of great things.
Thank you. Likewise.
And you guys have met, right? Or you haven't?
We
met in Michigan.
Michigan. Exactly. That's what I was going to say. In Michigan, yeah. Which is also where I got second holes pierced in my ears.
Yep.
Because the last experience I had piercing my ears was when I was 8 from Claire's Boutique.
Me too.
And Sarah experienced the trauma of her holes getting punctured in different directions. And then I experienced the gun. Where they didn't do both ears at the same time. They did one. And then I freaked out and I said, I'm going to need to take a walk around the mall because I don't want to come back and put the second one. And I ended up leaving and I didn't get my other ear pierced for like 2 more years because it was so painful.
You were just like rocking the one side.
I was just rocking the one earring on the left
that
side.
That happens a lot.
That's cool. Did you ever fall over?
But I definitely have photos of me in like third grade with a really bad perm, colored braces, and one earring in a school photo.
Which in the 90s, not cool. Today, maybe a little cooler, but in the 90s, it was like, oh, that kid is troubled.
Yeah, it wasn't great. So I wish I had had Rowan back in the day.
I also have to say, by the way, I got my ears pierced at Claire's.
You did?
Yeah. Back in the day.
What?
New Kids on the Block era. I kid you not.
Can you still put earrings in or no?
No. I mean, I don't remember how quickly I took them out, but it was not that long.
I see the hole, though.
Oh, yeah. But the hole never closed up. This is what I'm going to ask. Solving that problem would be a wonderful thing to figure out.
All right. Well, thank God Louisa is here and she founded Rowan, which mm-hmm. is an ear piercing business that uses nurses and not 15-year-olds who, mm-hmm. you know, are interning.
Yep. Thank Poor you. Sarah's ears are just, her no. earrings are all facing the different directions.
Listen, I'm not trying to like take anybody down, but I have been very vocal about, I think I had like a 12-year-old pierce my ears and she—
pierced them way too low.
Pierced them so low, I cannot wear—
Sarah's earlobes—
anything heavy no. basically falls out of your ear.
No, but you know what I can wear?
Sarah's earlobes trigger me, okay? Because Sarah is the most vain person you'll ever meet. If you know her, you know that. And she obsesses over the littlest detail, but for some reason, she's just fully accepted these droopy-ass earlobes. And I'm always like, girl, you can't walk out of the house with those droopy earlobes. Get them stitched up or something. It like triggers me looking at them. Anyway.
Can I see what's going on here?
You can't really see it because she's wearing very loose earrings. Mm-hmm. But
I'll tell you what I can wear is Rowan hoops. Those are the only hoops I wear because they are so light, but they look so heavy and substantial. Mm-hmm. Those, I swear to God, I'm not just saying this because you're here. If you guys are listening, go on Rowan.com.
Those hoops.
Get the hoops. They look like $1,000 hoops, but they are definitely not. They're under $100.
Very affordable. They're gold vermeil, so they're sterling silver and 14 karat gold.
Exactly.
So. And they're light. Take us. Super light.
Take us, Louisa, please introduce yourself. And take us to the beginning of Rowan. And
how'd you get the idea? What'd you do? Exactly. What were you doing when you had the idea? We're going to let you have the floor.
Okay. So Rowan, modern approach to ear piercing, exclusively done by licensed nurses. And my background is finance. So I had worked in investment banking. After graduating from college, I did M&A at Morgan Stanley. And my first deal was the sale of Brooks Brothers to Claudio Del Vecchio, who's, you know, he's an absolute genius. Luxottica, runs Luxottica. Really wonderful opportunity for me, who knew nothing at the time, to learn about brands and the value that they can play and sort of the consumer's appreciation for brands, et cetera. And so in that, I really fell in love with retail and fell in love with, you know, what makes a consumer want to be a part of an experience. And so fast forward, I become a mom. I have three kids, two boys, 14 and 12. 12-year-old dying to get his ears pierced. 14-year-old, not so much. And then I had my daughter who is 8. And when she was born, I was working at a hedge fund and I had had to give up breastfeeding, which I didn't really love, but it kind of was a bonding thing to go out and try to raise money for this fund. And we were shorting malls. So the thesis of the fund was shorting brick and mortar.
Sorry, pause. Do you mind explaining to our audience what shorting is?
Okay. So shorting is effectively making a bet that the value of something is going to go down. So there are different technical ways of doing it. We were doing it in the credit arena, but essentially you are putting money to work in the hope, not that something actually goes up in value, but with the expectation that it will lose value.
You're betting against a business.
Betting against something.
You're betting against something.
You're hoping something fails.
Yeah, you're betting on the failure of something.
It's a bit that. And essentially, if you've done a tremendous amount of work and you really understand what's driving the success and the cash flow of a business, and in this case, it was the inline retailers. So the JCPenney's of the world, the Sears of the world, they, back in the 70s, early 80s, when the malls were built, actually never paid rent. They were often paid to go there and be the anchor tenant of the mall. And when they started to go dark, fewer and fewer people went to malls. And these inline retailers were the ones paying rent to the big mall REITs that owned the properties. They were starving them of capital. So you would go in and it would be, you know, a pretty sad state, you know, dead plants or plastic plants, the same orange tiles that we knew from the early 80s, the whole situation. And then you would find a mall-based piercer like Claire's. And this was oftentimes the only retailer that was driving foot traffic. And when I was doing primary research at the time, so talking to 12-year-olds, 14-year-olds, I would ask them if they went to the mall. And they would often say, no, never, except to get my ears pierced. I went once. And this is not the class A malls that we know in large cities and in some smaller second and third tier cities that have been reinvested in. And I think that will always exist. These were, you know, and so anyway, just fascinated by this reality that this rite of passage, something that all women almost, and many men, as we're learning more and more, experience, was still owned predominantly by this retailer that lived and breathed in a place that most people didn't want to go to, and had not been innovated on at all. And here I was, a woman living in a man's world. Finance is still very much dominated by men. Allocation of capital decisions typically driven by men. And I was listening to the trading floor at this hedge fund talk about Claire's impending bankruptcy. 2018, they went through a bankruptcy process, not to liquidate, but to fix their capital structure, because they had been a $3.2 billion LBO led by Apollo. They had a lot of debt and they needed to clean it up. So these traders were talking about trading the bonds and, you know, what was the cash flow going to be? But no one was talking about the experience. And no one was talking about Sarah's ears that had gotten botched or any sort of issue with Erin running around with one earring for years because she couldn't get, you know, the situation that she needed, the care that she needed. And, you know, I knew I wasn't going to take my daughter there. And so it was this moment where I was very interested in entrepreneurship. I'd gone to Columbia Business School.
Which, by the way, right where you're saying, the other option besides a Claire's in the mall was going to like a seedy tattoo shop.
No, that's but that wasn't a thing in the 90s. That's a thing now. That wasn't a thing then.
But I'm saying before Rowan existed, that's where I took our niece Michaela to get her ear pierced when she was 16, was at a seedy tattoo place.
You did?
I did. I have a video of it. And I look back and I'm like, God, how did I like think that that was appropriate to do? So there was just really no good options. And you really saw a smart opening. Okay, continue.
It's no, you're exactly right, Erin. Tattoo parlors can be excellent places to get pierced. The issue with the industry, with the body art industry, is that there's no national regulation. It's very, it very much depends on the city even and the state where you live. And so there might be a great place to go, but it's just from an experience standpoint, especially for a young person, those places typically pierce all parts of the body. And it can be intimidating. So, and it need not be. This should be a magical, positive, celebratory moment. Rowan only pierces the ear. We don't pierce any other body part, and we don't do anything else but pierce the ear. So we know that ear anatomy better than anyone.
You don't need your 5-year-old getting pierced next to some chick getting her nipples pierced. You know what I mean? Like, you want to keep it.
I think a nipple piercing can be really attractive.
Mm, yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah. Listen, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. So we're going to leave it there. But at any rate, so, you know, I had this thought, and started to do research on it. My whole family, a big family of women, all doctors and nurses. And when I was talking to some of my aunts, they said that they'd pierced ears in clinical settings, and that they liked doing it. It was relatively straightforward, but that their patients always felt safer if they were in their hands than someone else's.
And clinical settings, meaning people would bring the person getting pierced to the doctor's office or the nurse's office.
Care, pediatrician, right. A lot of pediatricians' offices don't do it, more don't than do, because it's typically not reimbursable. But at any rate, so that was kind of the thought, wow, what if you could create an awesome job opportunity for nurses and create an incredible opportunity occasion to commemorate something. And we've done that. And so what we found is that people are looking, they're actively looking for a safe option. It's the number one deciding factor, really, is this going to be hygienic? Is it going to be safe? Is it going to be clean? And no one's better than nurses at that.
A safe, but also an experience. You want safe, but you want an experience. It's a big deal getting your ears pierced for most people. It's a thing, right? It's an event.
Exactly. Right. And it's a metamorphosis, you know, not to overdo it, because I'm not saying this is like the most important moment of your life, but typically you remember it. And there aren't that many moments that you remember. And so that's very important. And being able to do it in an environment that does feel intentional and celebratory and safe is a home run.
And by the way, to jump in, Allison, our producer, just side texted us and said, growing up, my mom wanted me to get my ears pierced at the doctor's office, but I was so embarrassed because I wanted to go to the cool place.
Right.
And so Rowan,
I love that.
Yeah, Rowan like brings both of those worlds together.
Thank you. Yeah, that's the idea.
Here you are, you're talking to your aunts. You're like, wait, okay. And a light bulb goes off, correct? You're like, wait a minute. Okay. Walk us through the light bulb moment, and then what's the strategy? Like, where do you go from that's a great idea to having to build this business?
Yeah. I mean, it's been 8 years since I had the first idea, and it's been every day since then. And, you know, as entrepreneurs yourselves, oftentimes your initial idea isn't what you end up being. The idea of piercing by a licensed nurse was always at the core of what we do. We started off doing it in people's homes because I didn't have millions of dollars to invest in building out retail at the time. But I wanted to kind of prove out the thesis that families would want a nurse to pierce their daughter's ears over another option. So we did that in Westchester. I live outside New York City, and I was able to hire a few nurses and get them trained in piercing ears. And we got booked, and COVID happened. And I thought, oh no, like, great. Like, I'm in the middle of this sort of MVP to hopefully raise a seed venture round. And now we're in the middle of COVID. And what ended up happening was that we became more popular than ever because we could go to people's homes and pierce outdoors. Nurses knew how to protect themselves and our patients. And it was an incredible opportunity to build a lot of knowledge. And then we actually even opened a studio on the Upper East Side during COVID. And the thinking was like, wow, we can get great rent. This will be an office if nothing else. We're not going to advertise it because at that time, if you put yourself back in the summer of 21, it was really uncertain time. You know, you didn't know. And we were absolutely booked. We would do individual appointments, a nurse and the family. And we didn't do any marketing for it. Now we do quite a bit of marketing, but it really started with that first initial studio on the Upper East Side with nurses that were piercing at people's homes and at the studio. We then had a partnership with Target, which took us to about 300 doors across the country. And that was unbelievable growth.
Can you talk about how that came to be? Meaning, like, where were you in your evolution? How sizable had you gotten before? And then how did you approach Target, and how does something like that
come
together?
And also, did you quit your job? We skipped over that. Like, right, were true. You good, working good on this at night while you were?
Yeah, I was working at this fund, and the portfolio manager there is still a dear friend. He was right. The thesis was right. But he was too early. And so, the timing, you know, I left to pursue Rowan proactively, but ultimately he wound down the fund. But yes, I left a friend of mine who went on to start another company, had gone to Stanford Business School, and she was sort of really great at building business models and business plans. And she and I sat down over coffee, and I told her the idea. And then she called me a week later and she said, why don't you come over? I've put some stuff down. And she had like a 30-page Excel model built out. And she was like, you have to do this. Like, this is a real business. You've got to do it. And so I will always thank Sarah for doing that.
Did Sarah want to be part of it with you, or she was just doing that as a friend?
Initially, she helped me, but then she went on to, you know, very early days, she went on to help start another company that since had $1 billion valuation. And
whoa,
that's a different story.
Damn, intro us to Sarah. But, yeah. I mean, we love an intro to Sarah.
We all need a friend like Sarah.
We all need a friend like Sarah.
I know. All need a friend like Sarah, definitely. But I think it's important. I think that piece of starting a company is consult your friends, consult people that have done it or that have a way of thinking that's different than yours. Have them test what you're thinking about, you know, any of why might it work? Why might it fail? If they're willing to spend time with you, help you with your business model, whatever it is, there's nothing more valuable.
Okay. So she was like, you have to do this. I've thought about it. I've spent the last week like looking at numbers, putting things together. Here's some sort of like, did she make a deck for you?
She didn't make a deck initially, no. But she did have, in some ways, aspects of it. Yeah, I mean, it was it was a model, which arguably is the hardest part of a deck. And it was, you know, it was the early kind of hypothesis of what might drive revenue and how you might do this. But at the core was this idea that the market is actually very, very large, and that there aren't any players doing it safely, where safety is the number one priority. And so that was the huge point of differentiation. So, yeah.
And presumably the way people were getting it done was just highly fragmented and distributed. There was no trusted brand anywhere in the universe for what you were doing.
Yes. I mean, I think it's very exciting to look at an area that you want to change or improve where the biggest players have a negative net promoter score. That is.
Can you talk? So, right? By the way, very interesting. Talk for a second about just for the audience, what net promoter score.
Also for me.
And for Aaron.
It's essentially, would you recommend this experience? Would you recommend this? Yes or no on a scale? It's weighted. What it means to have a negative net promoter score is that you, most people would actively tell you not to go there.
Mm. Wow. Right. Right. So it's basically a measurement of the strong
in the market for a service that you want to build. That's a great area to go in and try and improve upon, right? Because you're not trying to compete against somewhere where the incumbent is beloved.
Yeah. So right. So on it's basically net promoter score is like the spectrum. And on the one end, you get like these very strong advocates. And the more of those very strong advocates who would go recommend something to you, the higher your net promoter score goes. And as she is, noting, in some markets, you have negative net promoter scores where people will just advocate for you not to do something. Like they would tell you never in a million years you'd do this. And of course, you have people in the middle. And the world's great companies, Apple, Nike, Pick'em, have these very high net promoter scores. But in markets where it's negative, I think her observation, which is a very smart one, is there's a lot of opportunity within that.
Louisa, did you ever feel like, I want to do this with somebody, I want a co-founder? Or were you like, I work better alone, I'm going to just have mentors? Like, how did you sort of wrap your head around management team?
So I've had a couple of different people come in different levels and different stages of the company, not as co-founders, but as a number two, a COO role, for example. And they were typically right for where the business was at the time. For example, when we were scaling with Target, that was a very different business model than today, where we're building out our own studios across the country.
Well, no, so, where you sit today as an investor in your business, where you sit today, there's a roadmap to having how many locations?
We could easily have 1,000 doors. And the reason I say that is because the incumbents have that number. But more than that is in the data that we've been able to get from our existing studios now at almost 30, they're in really different places and different meaning, different socioeconomic makeup, different foot traffic. Some are in malls, some are in outdoor lifestyle centers, some are on high streets. And what we found is that our customer is different in those different places, but we still resonate. So maybe your customer is a tourist age 20 to 40, right? Great, that's going to work. Maybe your customer is 6 to 12 years old and is coming in with a family member to get pierced. Those are two different customers, but because Rowan is the only piercing company that pierces by a nurse and pierces both with a device, a hand pressure device, which is preferred for children, and a needle, we can pierce everyone. So that's a big differentiator for us.
And did you make an intentional decision to put Rowan, sort of make it available in a mix of socioeconomic environments to then understand how ubiquitous this model could be?
Part of it was intentional, yes. Part of it was, kind of what's happened in the past 24 months with the world. It's like everyone with venture money that had been spending money on paid decided to open a store. So it's hard to find great real estate, right? And so sometimes you kind of have to take what's available and test it. Mm-hmm. So
you're finding pretty great real estate, I must say. I mean, the locations that you are like, it's pretty incredible. I mean, at Favorite Daughter, we're looking at locations all the time. And yes, it is hard, but you're finding great locations.
We have an amazing partner called Retail Union. They're out of Dallas and they have been amazing at helping us identify locations. And, you know, we've used data. A lot of it is relationship driven and really being on the road a lot. So I've had to be on the road a lot and be really opportunistic. And that's been, it's really paid off because, you know, if you're signing a 7 or 10 year lease, you need to have a lot of conviction that the location will work.
So, what are you?
Go ahead, sorry.
I just have some sort of like some of the social questions that came in are we have a lot of people who listen to this podcast that are in like career ruts or feeling stuck. And I want to know what your feelings are around failure and if it ever stops you from making decisions or how you pursue something new without that fear stopping you.
Yeah, that's a great question, especially when there's relationships at stake or your own reputation or someone else's job. It can be really scary. I always go back to, you know, trying to create something out of nothing. I mean, it's an incredible experience. And if it works, it is one of the most unbelievable feelings. But you have to know that most startups in their initial state don't work. I think I listened to a podcast on Minted or some company where the founder, a woman, spoke about this and how she was able to hold on to like some aspect of the business that was working. And that's where she just kept investing. It was like, see the good and just go there. The Target experience for Rowan was definitely that. You know, we had almost 1,000 nurses across the country who were amazing and they were committed to Rowan. And Target was a great partner. The issue was just that ultimately the idea, which looked great on paper, when it was in real life, it didn't work for us. And it came down to a couple simple things. You know, it's very hard to build a differentiated branded experience in another store, in another person's four walls, right? Because we were the employer of that nurse, and they were our materials, but the whole experience was happening inside Target. Target's a great company, amazing brand. However, it wasn't Rowan. And so that piece was very difficult for us. And then there was the aspect of it only being really a weekend business. And so our nurses wanted to work more. They wanted this revenue stream to be more meaningful to them. And so in order for them to prioritize us, they needed more hours.
Well, I don't want to speak out of turn, Louisa, but walking away from Target, really betting on yourself is a theme we talk about a lot on the podcast. Mm-hmm. That is not an easy thing to do. In fact, when you were talking to me about the potential of you guys, you know, severing the relationship, right. I was like, are you sure about that? Like, it's Target, you know?
Well, it's scary for a million reasons. It's scary for a million reasons, especially when, you know, they had featured us on their investor day. I think we got like 4 slides in their presentation. They really wanted us to expand. And, but like I said, they saw what we saw. We were able to show them the data. I think that's a big thing, is really knowing what drives your business. Ultimately understanding that a business needs to make money because you need to be able to pay people and you need to be able to reinvest. And, if you're talking to people that are reasonable and you can show them that something is not going to succeed, they're going to understand. And so ultimately we were able to get there. And we were able to begin to invest in our studios, which were doing really well. But, you know, to your question, Aaron, we had to let a lot of people go, and that was really, really, really hard. And I think over Zoom, it's really hard too, to not come off as like a feelingless, you know, computer. I don't know. And you feel heartless. You're not sitting next to people in the same way. That's really hard. Right. And I think, doing it, knowing that the reason we were doing it is so that we could reinvest to build something that actually could pay for itself and be profitable and do the right thing was really hard. But I wouldn't not do it, right?
Right. It sounds like walking away from Target and that opportunity was really scary and had a lot of risk involved, but it was the only way you could stay true to the brand. And that's something that we really see in our own company.
That's exactly what it was.
And with other founders that are doing it right is they're not thinking about the headline. They're not thinking about their name next to Target. They're thinking about what's best for the brand. The brand is the star, not you, the founder, but the brand itself, right? Because then in turn, you become the person behind that brand that's doing so well. And I think people really lose their way because they get
caught up
and distracted by these things that seem like they're huge opportunities, but a huge opportunity that's going to, you know, change the business and make it inauthentic isn't a huge opportunity.
100%. You couldn't be more right. I mean, it's so, so true. I think for us at the time, there were some tremendous positives that came out of it in terms of creating
brand awareness,
that check of approval, right? You know, Target approved, mom approved, nurse approved. That was really, really incredible. And probably one of the hardest meetings I've ever had to do was flying to Minneapolis, sitting in a boardroom with a lot of senior executives at Target. And, you know, I think we had 10 nurses that worked at Rowan at the time. And this RFP went to all the piercing companies and we somehow won it and succeeded in getting into 300 doors. So that was Herculean. And that was like pretty early days. So I'm very proud of that.
I think a lot of people listening have ideas. A lot of people have a lot of ideas all the time, but there's a huge gap between having an idea and having a product or having a business. So how do you go from, you have this idea, you talk to your friend, Sarah, she's like, yes, move forward. That gives you the confidence, that gives you whatever, to then actually having a business. Like you go to, how do you go raise money right away? Do you put your own money in? Like talk to us about that.
100%. Yes. I think so. In the first couple of years I worked out of my attic. And this wasn't because it was COVID. It was because that was the only place I could work out of. And I did a lot of pulling together of big email lists of friends, of local people that I knew, local marketing. And I know sometimes that doesn't seem like sexy or great, but if you can build a really strong base of people that live around you and that want and like the product or the service that you're selling, then you can replicate that in other markets. And I think that's very, very important. Thinking about your marketing strategy and how that marketing strategy can pay for itself and be affordable to you at whatever stage you're in is really important. So, you know, you don't have to go hire some unbelievable marketing company and you don't have to work with really expensive influencers. You know, there are other ways of doing it. And it just depends on what type of community you're trying to reach and how you're thinking of getting the word out. But, you know, there's definitely no substitute for just showing up every day and keeping doing it, just continuing to have confidence in yourself. Because I think if you believe in it and you think it's a good idea, then it is. And then it's just, you know, you just need to find those customers and just continuing to get out there in front of them is what makes the difference.
Are you somebody who feels comfortable putting yourself out there and asking for help? I think that as women, I mean, I know for myself, it took me a really long time to realize that asking for help isn't being weak, it's actually being strong. So how are you as a founder when it comes to asking for help when you need it?
Well, I think there's like a couple points there. Like one, I have another good friend who I spoke to a lot as I was getting started, and she has a small business and she has an unbelievably hilarious sense of humor. And I was talking to her about, you know, trying to talk about Rowan in the early days, and people would be like kind of pedantic, like, oh, your little jewelry company, or that's so cute. And, you know, meanwhile, I had this vision of what I wanted to build. And I was talking to her and telling her like it was kind of challenging to show up at school pickup and like stand around other moms who were still going to real jobs. And there I was like with, you know, this idea of this ear piercing company. And she was like, oh, you mean the haters? I was like, yeah, I'm not talking about the haters. She's like, Louisa, like everyone wants to have the courage to go do this, but it's very rare to do it. So you're going to have people that don't like it. It's not that they don't like you, but they want to be able to do it themselves. So you just kind of have to like put that aside and just, you know, be really positive and know that, you know, you're doing what you need to do. Like, this is your path.
We also have to pause on that for a second. I'm sorry, Louisa, you went to business school. You worked at major hedge funds. You worked at, was it Morgan Stanley? You're a serial you've accomplished is...
But she was still standing in the school line.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, look at as women at the pressure we put on ourselves. And who are we comparing ourselves to? Like, all that you've accomplished and you're standing there thinking, I'm a loser.
Mm-hmm. But you see it. It's all women, you know? Yeah. I mean, I think, and I see it even in my kids, like, you know, and I, you know, not to, it's somewhat stereotypical, but I do think that, oftentimes men, especially in my experience, just were going to go out and say they could do it. And my dad did give me that advice growing up. He said, if you get asked in an interview, if you know how to do something, just say yes, because you can figure it out.
Mm-hmm. We love that.
That's great advice.
Figure it out later. Yeah. Say yes and you'll figure it out. And we talk about that a lot because I think a lot of career pivots are into areas that are uncharted, that you don't have experience in. And a lot of times people feel like, oh, I have to have mastered this and know exactly how to do it in order to say yes. But the truth is that most people are looking for someone that's going to think outside the box, that's going to take a fresh perspective and inject it into the job. And so saying yes to something you don't know how to do, it doesn't mean that you're not going to learn how to do it and do a really great job at it.
There's no mandate for being a founder, right? But I think a lot of people thinking like, oh, I have to have this, I have to have that to actually start my own company. And
women, we feel like we have to qualify everything. Like, okay, I just want to be all honest with you. I haven't done that before, but I do think that I could do a good job of it. And if I'm not doing a good job of it, please let me know. Whereas Phil over here, you know,
Phil's like, I got this.
Phil's just going to be like, yeah, I fucking was born an expert to do this.
And I know everything.
Phil, so. I was born ready. I got balls.
I've not said any of those. I think nowhere in my life have I said those phrases.
You went to business school in the womb, huh? really good. Listen,
that's awesome.
I know we're wrapping up here and Louisa.
Wrapping up? We just got started.
I'm sorry.
It does feel like we just got started.
I know you don't like
it. No, we still have 7 minutes.
You have 5 minutes. Actually, 12:15 is our end.
Well, Louisa, we could probably go 5 more minutes, no?
Okay, I'm good.
Yeah. We don't have to. Okay, whatever.
We also have to be downtown.
Continue.
Well, I was just going to say, I was like rounding up. I mean, I was just saying thank you for being so open and so candid because like, you know, not everyone's really willing to show the uncomfortable stuff that happens when you start a company. And not that we want to focus on the negative, but there's so much to learn from the negative. And I think there are so many people who are scared to pursue something risky like this because of the potential failure, because of the potential mistakes. So talking about the mistakes and saying how you recovered from them or the low points, it kind of helps dust off the scary stuff for potential founders. So, I mean, the school line with the moms, I think, is such a really great example of one. But someone on social did write in, you know, saying like, what was a low point where maybe you thought you couldn't go on or that you couldn't move forward?
Right.
And I don't know if you have if that kind of was it.
I think we had a bunch of those. I mean, after one thing that's really hard about being a founder and then running the business is, and our amazing board member, Tracy Gardner, she's on the board of Gap and Crocs and she ran J. Crew. She's a legend. And she talked to me about this early on when I met her. She said, you are going to see things that are going to take a while to happen. And you're going to already know, like that's where the puck is going or whatever, but you're not going to be able to effectuate change quickly enough. Right. So it's going to be really hard for you to see. So I knew that the target business probably wasn't going to work. I knew the numbers. I knew what was happening. I saw it. But I had a lot of people employed supporting that business. And I had to work through it with people. And it was a real low point, right? To go to work every day, continuing even in some ways to build something towards something that I knew we were going to have to tear down again. That was really, really hard. I think, you know, I've also learned a lot about trying to be the best leader that I can be. And I think, you know, having a background in distressed debt, you're always looking at like, what could kill the company? What could go wrong? So there's like a pessimism there, and really trying to lean into optimism is so much more powerful in terms of helping to build motivation towards something. Mm-hmm. So, you know that you're more of a glass half empty type person, like try to lean into people that are more glass half full, because that's going to help you on those hard days. Mm-hmm. And then hire people that know the stuff that you don't know.
Yeah.
And then just really trust them.
I think that's really good
but
advice.
Target was an incredible piece of the puzzle. I mean, Target, like we all know how expensive it is to acquire a customer right now. Think about all the customers and all the brand awareness.
It was unbelievable.
It really was.
Honestly, like I don't know that, I know for a fact we wouldn't be where we are today without it.
Mm-hmm. And it was so clearly many
nurses,
a big
like
test.
Our nurses in Chicago, a number of them worked with us at Target, and they said, we waited a year or however long because we just wanted this experience again.
Louisa, do you struggle to like, because you are in a way a jewelry company. You sell a lot of jewelry on the side. We've talked about this, really trying to figure out that struggle. Like, are we an ear piercing business or are we a jewelry company and the intersection of that, right? And that's something you've really had to work through.
Right. Totally. It's been a huge part of really understanding who we are and what drives what we do. I mean, I think we want to pierce people's ears. We want to do it in the safest way possible. I am super excited about some research that we're doing. The average rate of negative outcome for piercing is almost 30%. That's insane. And we have done some research that we're going to publish that shows that we're less than 1%.
Wow. That's amazing.
That's on 10,000 piercings. It's crazy.
I mean, that's really good.
So we are a piercing company first and foremost, but in order to pierce well, a lot of people have a bad outcome, not because they get a bad piercing, but they go and put in a bad earring, meaning an earring that has nickel in it or another allergy-inducing metal, or an earring that's too heavy. And so what we want to do is lean into the product solutions that our customers need to have a great holistic ear piercing. And then we want to sell all those basics. Like, what are the first pairs of earrings you buy after you get pierced? Is it your first pair of diamond earrings? Is it a beautiful hoop? What are those? And then we want to have some fun with some of the whimsical designs. Like we just came out with today with our Pride collection, and it's based on things that worked for us last year. But last night when we launched it, I mean, we've almost sold out of these rainbow lightning bolts that are unbelievable. I will send you some, don't worry. But they're awesome. And, you know, bringing in a design team that is working. So the way we're approaching it now is that our jewelry design team is working hand in hand with our full-time medical board and nurse who is researching, how can we make an earring design better? How do we make sure that the back of the ear continues to get airflow when it's healing? Because the traditional earring backs aren't awesome for that. And so thinking about solutions and being more solution oriented is where we're headed.
All right, Louisa. So if you're going to go back, we have to wrap it up. Mm-hmm. We're going to end every, it doesn't take us 45 minutes to get downtown. It's fine. Going back to day one of starting the business, if you're going to go back to that day, what would you, is there one thing that you're like, oh, I wish I could just go back to that one day and do this differently? Is there one thing you can think of?
That's a great question. I think that if I could have hired, and we just did, and her name's Dana Morgan, and she's unbelievable, a really, really incredible head of people out of the gates. If you're going to build a business around people, then have someone who knows that. They know all about it. And then, you know, because then they will help you, you know, make the right decisions around hiring and culture building that are so critical. I think we're there. We've done a really great job at that. It's hard to do it all at once, though. And that's one thing about being a founder is that when it's just you and your idea, you may have a harder time hiring, you know, the most qualified person for the job, but ultimately you'll be able to. So
it all comes down to people.
Well, Louisa, you're awesome. Your business is thriving. Another company that's going to make Sarah rich, which I'm not happy about. But I'm not going to short you guys. Don't worry. I want you to succeed.
Thank you.
I want you to succeed. And so thank you so much for being so candid and so open. Go out and get your ears pierced by Rowan.
And by their hoops, people.
Yeah, very good hoops.
Thank you.
Thanks Louisa. So much.
Bye, Louisa.
Bye. See you soon.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Hope you liked it as much as we did.
We have a big, big, big request for you.
We do.
Please go leave a review. It makes a big difference for us.
I was about to say, Erin, don't sound so desperate, but we are a little desperate.
We are a little desperate. We need you to leave a review. It's really important, and we don't ask you for anything.
2 seconds. By the way, send a screenshot of your review, and maybe we'll post it.
Okay.
Maybe we'll call you. Maybe we'll... Why are you rolling your eyes?
Just every episode it's going to say that, though.
Great. Okay.
This podcast is executive produced by...
Can you not use that voice?
I'm sorry, I'm trying to sound...
Yeah, but you don't need to make it sexy.
This podcast is executive produced by...
Do you have a normal voice?
Yeah. Erin Foster, Sarah Foster, and Allison Bresnick.
Okay, I'll take over. Our associate producer is Montana McBierney. Our audio engineer is Josh Windisch. This show is hosted by Simplecast.
See, that didn't sound nice.
That sounded great.